From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. It is Saturday, June 18th, 2016. I'm Katie Weaver from the Learning English Studio in Washington, D.C. Coming up on the podcast, an O. Henry love story about the harmless and humorous tricks we sometimes play to win love and friendship. The Count and the Wedding Guest is our American story today. Also later, Ashley Thompson and I take you to America's biggest national park. Many Americans do not even know that Wrangell St. Elias exists. But first, Christopher Jones Cruz joins us with the latest news on the tragic mass shooting earlier this week in Orlando, Florida.
Some victims of the mass shooting in the United States are being buried this weekend. 49 people were shot to death Sunday at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. The gunman, Omar Mateen, also was killed. More than 50 other people were wounded. About 300 people were inside the Pulse nightclub at the time of the attack. Mateen exchanged gunfire with a security guard, entered the building, and then took hostages, Orlando Police Chief John Mina said. About 3 hours later, law enforcement officials sent in a special police team to rescue the hostages. Officers shot and killed Mateen. Police say he had an assault rifle and a handgun. During the early morning hours, Mateen used Facebook to search the terms Pulse Orlando and shooting from inside the nightclub. In earlier Facebook posts, he expressed support for Islamic State group leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and called for an end to U.S. and Russian bombings of IS positions. Mateen was born in New York and was a U.S. citizen. His parents are from Afghanistan. The gunman had worked as a security guard since 2007. A federal agent said he bought at least two guns legally in the week before the attack. The Federal Bureau of Investigation questioned him earlier after reports that he had made comments in support for the Islamic State. FBI Director James Comey told reporters on Monday federal agents had questioned Mateen in 2013 and 2014. Investigators also followed him and had studied his communications and contacts. But officials took no action against him because the FBI did not find any evidence of criminal activity. Comey said Mateen had strong indications of radicalization and may have been inspired by foreign terrorist organizations. But he added that the FBI has so far found no evidence the Orlando gunman was assisted or supported by any foreign terror groups. FBI officials say Mateen's wife had some knowledge of his plans to attack the nightclub. One investigator said Noor Zahi Salman went with her husband on a reconnaissance mission to the nightclub between June 5th and 9th. Law enforcement officials told reporters that Salman warned her husband not to carry out the attack as he left for Orlando last Saturday. Salman was born in the United States to Palestinian parents. She was Mateen's second wife and the mother of their 3-year-old son. On Monday, the Islamic State called Omar Mateen one of the soldiers of the caliphate in America. However, the group did not make any claim of responsibility for the nightclub attack. Mateen's father, Sadiq Mateen, told NBC News that he did not believe the attack was connected to religion. He suggested it was more likely an act of homophobia. He said his son had expressed deep anger when he saw two men kissing recently. President Barack Obama went to Orlando Thursday and met with some of the wounded and with the families of those who were killed. He also spoke with some of the police officers who helped end the shooting, emergency medical workers, and doctors who treated the wounded. Obama repeated his earlier statements that the attack was both an act of terrorism and an act of hate. This was an attack on the LGBT community. Americans were targeted because we're a country that has learned to welcome everyone, no matter who you are or who you love. Obama added that the government would be relentless against terrorist groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. We are going to destroy them. We are going to disrupt their networks and their financing and the flow of fighters in and out of war theaters. We're going to disrupt their propaganda that poisons so many minds around the world. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Today, we are visiting a vast and remote park in the state of Alaska. The park is bigger than the country of Switzerland. It is 6 times the size of Yellowstone. In fact, it is the largest national park in America. Its name is Wrangell St. Elias. Do not worry if you have not heard of America's biggest national park. Most Americans do not know its name. But Wrangell St. Elias contains some of North America's largest glaciers and volcanoes. It is also home to 9 of the highest mountains in America. The park extends more than 5.3 million hectares. 4 mountain ranges come together here, including the Wrangell Mountains and the St. Elias Mountains. The Wrangell Mountains cover much of the park. They were formed over the last 5 million years from volcanic activity. The St. Elias Mountains stretch into Canada's Yukon Territory. The Chugach Mountains cover the southern part of the park. The Alaskan Mountain Range forms some of the huge park's northern boundary. The mountain landscape is wild. Much of it is also difficult to reach. Private companies offer flight-seeing tours on planes and helicopters. From high above, visitors witness Wrangell St. Elias's beauty.
Rivers and glaciers help tell the story of Wrangell St. Elias National Park. These rivers, with names like Copper, Chitina, Chisana, and Chittistone, come from the park's many glaciers. They wind through land carved out by other huge glaciers long ago. The Copper, the largest river of them all, flows into the Gulf of Alaska. Other rivers take a more dramatic path. The Chittistone River becomes Chittistone Falls, a 91-meter-tall waterfall that drops over a steep wall. Glaciers cover almost 13,000 square kilometers of the park. In the summer months, the park's rivers carry their meltwater. It is filled with tiny pieces of sand, stone, and other materials. A buildup of this sediment forces the rivers to flow through new channels. This causes the river beds to twist and turn. From up above, these rivers can look like braided hair. One of the park's most striking places is the Hubbard Glacier. It is the longest tidewater glacier in North America. A tidewater glacier is one that begins in a mountain valley and flows all the way to a body of water. The Hubbard Glacier is 120 kilometers long and nearly 10 kilometers wide. It begins on the 6,000-meter-tall Mount Logan in Canada's Yukon Territory. It ends in the waters of a place called Disenchantment Bay. Hubbard was named in 1890 after Gardner Hubbard, the first president of the National Geographic Society. The massive glacier is only getting bigger. Unlike most glaciers, Hubbard is thickening and extending. Other glaciers face melting caused by increasing temperatures. But experts say Hubbard reacts in an opposite way to climate change. As the Earth's temperature rises, the area around Wrangell St. Elias gets more snow and rain. Scientists say this snow and rain is what permits the glacier to grow. Sometimes very fast growth causes huge pieces of ice to break apart from the glacier. Scientists call this calving. The ice creates a thunderous sound as it breaks and falls into the water. Hubbard Glacier's size, beauty, and calving activity have made it popular with park visitors. Large boats travel through Disenchantment Bay, taking passengers close to the glacier.
Wrangell St. Elias's system of glaciers and rivers help support animal life in the park. The park's Dall sheep may be the most famous animal residents. Alaska's Dall sheep are the world's northernmost wild sheep population. About 13,000 Dall sheep live within the park's borders. Visitors can look for their white bodies and huge brown horns near rocky mountainsides. Visitors might also see black bears, brown bears, moose, and caribou. Caribou are large North American reindeer with huge, wide antlers. Along the coast, seals and sea lions lie on the ice and splash in the water. Wrangell St. Elias became a national park in 1980. The park's main visitors center is about 300 kilometers east of Anchorage. The long drive to get to the park is an adventure itself. The trip includes roadside views of mountains, glaciers, waterfalls, and lakes. Its distant location makes it one of America's least visited national parks. About 75,000 people visit Wrangell St. Elias each year. By comparison, parks like Yosemite and Yellowstone get about 3 million visitors each year. visitors can experience the park's pristine nature as well as its historical areas. The Athabascan people lived in the area thousands of years ago. The park includes sites of their villages and hunting areas. The park also has many historical structures and buildings. The National Park Service says the structures represent periods of exploration, mining, and transportation.
One historical place is called Kennicott Milltown. The picturesque town tells a story of westward expansion and discovery. Miners processed nearly $200 million worth of copper at Kennicott Mines between 1911 and 1938. Many of the buildings that remain in the town have been empty for 60 years. Some are in disrepair. The National Park Service works with the local community to restore and preserve them. Some visitors stay at Kennicott during their trip to Wrangell St. Elias. The family-owned Kennicott Glacier Lodge provides beautiful views of the surrounding glacial mountains. It also gives visitors a chance to try exciting outdoor activities like glacier hiking or ice climbing. Some visitors choose to sleep in the wild outdoors. Private campsites are located in many areas of the park. Some visitors set out on long hikes in the park's backcountry area. Whatever way you visit, the immense and untouched beauty of Wrangell St. Elias National Park is guaranteed to awe. We turn now to our American Stories series. This week, we hear the humorous O. Henry tale, The Count and the Wedding Guest.
Andy Donovan had his dinner each evening in the house on 2nd Avenue, where he lived in a furnished room. One evening at dinner, he met a new guest, a young lady, Miss Conway. Miss Conway was small and quiet. She was wearing a plain brown dress. She seemed interested in very little, except her dinner. And her dinner did not interest her very much. She looked up at Mr. Donovan and spoke his name, and then began to eat again. Mr. Donovan had a smile that everyone liked. He smiled at her and then thought no more about her. 2 weeks later, Andy was sitting outside the house enjoying the cool evening. He heard a movement behind him. He turned his head and could not turn it back again. Coming out of the door was Miss Conway. She was wearing a night black dress of soft, thin cloth. Her hat was black. She was putting black gloves on her hand. There was no white and no color anywhere about her. All black. Someone in her family had died. Mr. Donovan was certain about that. Her rich golden hair lay soft and thick at the back of her neck. Her face was not really pretty, but her large gray eyes made it almost beautiful. She looked up into the sky with an expression of sadness. All black, readers. Think of her. All black. And that golden hair. And looking sadly far away. Mr. Donovan suddenly decided to think about Miss Conway. He stood up.
"It's a fine, clear evening, Miss Conway," he said.
"It is to them with the heart to enjoy it, Mr. Donovan," said Miss Conway. She took a deep, slow breath.
I hope no one of your family has died.
Death has taken, said Miss Conway, not one of my family, but one who... I must not speak of my troubles to you, Mr. Donovan.
Why not, Miss Conway? Perhaps I could understand.
Miss Conway smiled a little, and oh, her face was sadder than when she was not smiling.
Laugh, and the world laughs with you, she said. But the world is not interested in sadness. I've learned that, Mr. Donovan. I have no friends in this city, but you have been kind to me. Thank you for it.
He had done nothing except offer her the salt at dinner. It's not easy to be alone in New York, said Mr. Donovan. But when New York is friendly, it's very friendly. Shall we take a little walk in the park? It might be good for you.
Thanks, Mr. Donovan. I would enjoy it. But I don't want my sadness to make you sad.
They went through the open gates of the park and found a quiet seat.
We were going to be married soon, said Miss Conway. He was a real count. He had land and a big house in Italy. Count Fernando Mazzini was his name. My father didn't want me to marry him. Once we ran away to get married, and my father followed and took me home. I was afraid they were going to fight. But then my father agreed. Fernando went to Italy to make everything ready for me. My father's very proud. Fernando wanted to give me several $1,000s for new clothes, and my father said no. When Fernando went away, I came to the city. I work in a shop. 3 days ago, I had a letter from Italy. It said that Fernando had been killed. That's why I'm wearing black. My heart has died, Mr. Donovan, with Fernando. I cannot take interest in anyone. I should not keep you from your friends who can smile and enjoy things with you. Shall we walk back to the house?
Now, readers, if a girl tells a man her heart has died, he wants to make it live again. I'm very sorry, said Mr. Donovan. No, we won't walk back to the house yet. And don't say you have no friends in this city, Miss Conway. I'm your friend, and I want you to believe that.
I have his picture here, said Miss Conway. I wear it on a chain around my neck. I never showed it to anyone, but I will show it to you, Mr. Donovan. I believe you to be a true friend.
Mr. Donovan looked for a long time with much interest at the picture. The face of Count Mazzini commanded interest. It was wise, bright, the face of a strong, happy man who could be a leader of other men.
I have a larger picture in my room, said Miss Conway. When we return, I will show you that. I have nothing more to help me remember Fernando, but he will always live in my heart. I'm sure of that.
Mr. Donovan decided that he wanted to take the Count's place in Miss Conway's heart. He did not seem to think he could fail. He would be friendly. He would keep smiling. When they returned to the house, she ran to her room and brought down the picture of the Count. Mr. Donovan looked at it. No one could have guessed what he was thinking.
He gave me this on the night he left for Italy, said Miss Conway. A fine-looking man, said Mr. Donovan warmly. Miss Conway, will you go to Coney Island with me next Sunday afternoon?
A month later, they told the other guests in the house on Second Avenue that they were going to be married. Miss Conway continued to wear black. A week later, the two sat on the same seat in the park. Donovan had had a sad face all day. He was so quiet tonight that Miss Conway had to ask him why.
What's wrong tonight, Andy?
Nothing, Maggie.
You never were like this before. What is it?
It's nothing much, Maggie.
Yes, it is. And I want to know. Is it some other girl? Why don't you go to her if you want her? Take your arm away.
I will tell you then, said Andy wisely, but you will not understand. Have you heard about Mike Sullivan? Everyone calls him Big Mike Sullivan.
I've never heard about him, said Maggie. Who is he?
He is the most important man in New York. He is a mile high and as broad as the East River. If you say anything bad about Big Mike, a million men will be ready to fight you. Big Mike is a friend of mine. I am only a little man, but Mike is as good a friend to a little man as he is to a big man. I met him today by chance, and what do you think he did? He came up to me to shake my hand. I told him I was going to be married in 2 weeks. Andy, says he, I will come to the wedding. That is what he said to me, and he always does what he says. You don't understand it, Maggie, but I want to have Big Mike Sullivan at our wedding. It would make me very proud.
Then why don't you ask him to come?
Said Maggie. There's a reason why I can't, said Andy sadly. Don't ask me the reason, for I can't tell you.
But can't you smile at me?
Said Maggie. Maggie, said Andy after a few minutes, do you love me as much as you loved Count Mazzini? He waited a long time, but Maggie did not reply. And then suddenly she put her head against his shoulder and began to cry. She held his arm and her tears wet the black dress. Maggie, Maggie, said Andy, forgetting his own trouble. Tell me about it.
Andy, said Maggie, what I told you was not true. And there never was any count. There never was a man in love with me. All the other girls had men in love with them. And, Andy, I look good in black. You know I do. So I went to a shop where I could buy that picture. And that story about the count, none of it was true. I said he had died because I wanted to wear black. And no one can love me because I didn't tell the truth. I never liked anyone but you. And that's all.
But Andy did not move away. Instead, his arm pulled her nearer to him. She looked up and saw that he was smiling.
Do you still love me, Andy?
Sure, said Andy. You have made everything fine, Maggie. I hoped you would do it before the wedding day. Good girl.
Andy, said Maggie after a little time, did you believe all that story about the count?
No. Not very much, said Andy. Because that is Big Mike Sullivan's picture that you're wearing on the chain around your neck.
That was the short story, The Count and the Wedding Guest, by American author O. Henry. That's all the time we have for Learning English Weekend. But come back tomorrow for the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend. Christopher Jones Cruz brings in his usual segments, including the Education Report. Pete Musto reports on the experiences of a college student from Spain who is studying at the University of Alabama. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Katie Weaver.